Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for August 3rd, 2009. And on this week's episode, we have an interview with three actors from Macbeth, playing at the First Folio Theater. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, and let's talk theater.
Hello, and welcome to Talk Theater in Chicago at theaterinchicago.com. I'm your host this week, Benno Nelson, and I'm here with three actors from the current show of Shakespeare's Macbeth at the Peabody Estate First Folio Theater in Oak Brook. And we're talking to these three actors today because the three of them have had the unique pleasure, I guess we'll find out, of being in two separate productions of Shakespeare's Macbeth this year on Chicago stages. So joining me are, on my left, Patrick Clear.
Hello.
I have Joel Stanley Huff.
Hello.
And E.B. Smith.
Hello, Benno.
So the three of you were all also in the Macbeth at Chicago Shakes.
Right.
And
but none of us were actually playing the parts we're playing now.
Yeah, I guess this is as good a time as any to go around and just point out that, Patrick, you are playing Duncan and Seaward.
Seaward and Lord Argyle.
Lord Argyle. the significant eye patch.
Yes.
And
in the previous production, you were...
I was the old man, which we played as a priest, and then I was a lord, and then I was the doctor.
Doctor, yeah.
Yeah.
And Joel?
Previously, I was Murderer One, and... Yeah. A person that got killed a bunch.
Yeah. McDonald, right?
Sorry. I was. And I got...
Unseamed.
Unseamed.
From the nave to the chaps.
By Ben Carlson every night.
Nice.
And screamed. And that was very much like an action film opening sequence. It was really, really pretty exciting. But, so yes, I was Murderer One and McDonald.
And now you're Ross.
And now I'm Ross.
And E.B., you were the captain and Seton, if I remember.
That's right.
And as Joel
captain.
Likes to point out, I was Murderer Two.
Yes, Murderer Two.
Two is Murderer One. Yeah.
Which, coincidentally, in the first fight, I am Norwegian One.
And I am Norwegian Two.
Wow, interesting.
Wow. So, yeah.
I don't know.
That's ensemble work right there. That's ensemble.
Yeah.
I'll play Joel's second fiddle anytime. It's an honor. And now I'm playing Macduff in this production.
Right. Oh, yeah, I should mention I'm in this production of Macbeth. Yeah. I didn't say that. I play Menteith, so.
Yeah, and amazing death scenes.
Yes,
yeah,
amazing
thank
death
you.
Scenes.
Thank you.
And some of the most incredible reactions I've ever seen in my life.
Yes, Benno was very good in our show.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Before this year, had any of you ever done Macbeth before?
I had never done a full version before. When I was in graduate school, we used to do an abridged version 3 times a year, so I'd done it 9 times.
Wow, the same production.
Yeah, because part of my assistantship in graduate school was an arts company that we would perform for a class in general education in the arts. So we would play, I said, this is about an hour abridgment. It's called the greatest hits of Macbeth. You know, we'd get all the famous monologues and the scenes between Macbeth and Lady Macbeth.
Mm-hmm.
No arm. I had a two-man army. So it was depressing enough. depressing enough. The woods of Burnham are coming towards me, and I've got a two-man army. So this is the first time I've done a full-length version.
Well, the second time, I guess.
Yeah, second time,
right. And Joel, you
No, just in class in grad school, I worked... pretty extensively on the character of Macbeth for a semester, but it was just scenes in class and there was no real performance.
Interesting. And E.B.?
My experience is about the same. I've worked on scenes, but never the full length.
So it's interesting that you had both done kind of like a para Macbeth. Is mm-hmm. Macbeth a show that you like were interested in doing? Have you like always wanted to do Macbeth?
Anything? Yeah, I have always wanted to do it. So I've seen a couple of stage versions of it, and you know, it's one that adapts itself very readily to different time periods because it's kind of, for one thing, it's the cleanest story in Shakespeare mm-hmm. because there's no subplot. You know, it's just relentless. It just very, I think that's one of the reasons that it's probably more film adaptations than I think almost any other, One of my favorites of which is Joe Macbeth, which is a...
Oh, I don't know that.
It's set as like 30s gangland in Chicago, Paul Douglas, Ruth Roman.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's Akira Kurosawa's Throne of Blood.
Right.
There's,
mm-hmm.
there's all different kinds of versions.
Scotland,
of
PA. That.
Yes, yeah. Very, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. and in that desire, was that like twinned with a particular role or just sort of like walking through the show in general?
One of the things that intrigues me about the play so much is the fact that you can really tell countless number of stories through it. I mean, depending on what sort of through line you choose to pick up on, it mm-hmm. changes the entire complexion of the play.
Yeah.
You know, this particular play is very, very sort of masculine and action heavy, and it's got a very sort of heavy hand, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the previous Macbeth that we did together seemed to be a lot more sort of psychodrama. It was very heady. It was sort of a psycho thriller in a way. You know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And those both seem like honest interpretations of what you're saying.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think everything that each director has done can be justified in the text, but the text is kind of wide open to interpretation, like Patrick was saying. So yeah.
So you think there's something inherent about Macbeth that lends itself to multiple productions?
Multiple interpretations?
Yeah.
I mean, Lear the same. I think all the...
Yeah.
Lear the same way. Mm-hmm. The ones that are... I mean, there's a whole slew of his plays that are like... are really about middle-class mercantile values, like Merry Wives of Windsor, for example, that don't lend themselves as readily. But,
right.
I mean, Othello, Hamlet, King Lear, Macbeth. I mean, they just... Those basic drives are present in every kind of culture and society, and I think they lend themselves to pretty wide interpretation.
Yeah, yeah. But none of you had like a particular role in mind or anything like that.
Well, at my age, you know, it's either old Seward.
It's just Seward. It's just Seward. Okay.
Yeah, we're going spry Seward. Yeah, but playing Duncan in this one, yeah, no particular role.
Okay.
No. How about you guys?
Yeah. My experience with it in grad school was I had a professor that thought I should work on Macbeth because he thought I would play it eventually. So that's why he chose, and he kind of chose everybody's roles that way in that particular semester. Because he was a director and directed a lot before, and he kind of picked a character for each person that he felt they could be cast as or play. I don't know how true that is today, but that's why I worked on it in school.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I think in general, I know a young actor who has like gone to the trouble of making a list of like all the shows he wants to work on and all the parts that he wants to play over like the course of his life.
Yeah,
and I think that sort of deservedly draws like a lot of sniggers. But
no, I think we all did when we were young actors. You know, and it's funny how over time that changes. I remember, you know, like my mental list of what was a good part. Do I have an emotional catharsis? Am I, you know, really able to plumb some emotional depths? You know, in earlier days, and now it's like, is there any heavy lifting? are there a lot of stairs on stage? I see this character sitting a lot. What are you saying?
Anyone else?
Well, I think that I didn't know much about the play, you know, from a very personal point of view going into it the first time. But, watching the exploration of each character really opened my eyes to the depth of each of these characters. I mean, they all have a really intense connection to this world and to the events in this world, and they're so interconnected to Duncan's murder and the actions that Macbeth takes. And it really kind of opened my eyes to the fact that all of these characters are fantastic roles. I mean, they all have such a breadth of possibility as far as what you can do with them and what choices you can make. And I don't think there's a character in the play that I would feel shortchanged on if it were offered to me. So.
No, I mean Ross is one of the. I mean, you don't normally think of that as one of the really interesting roles. I mean, you think Macbeth, Macduff, Lady Macbeth, and Banquo. But I mean, Ross is a great part.
Yeah, he is. Well, he's so active throughout the story. There's no big breaks, so it makes for a quick run of the show when you're out there a lot and. He also is so informed, and he stays with Macbeth so long, which was something that Nick and I really talked about. I didn't think about that in the last production about how Ross comes into that, but He really does stay on the side of Macbeth a lot longer than most characters.
He's kind of like Casca in a way, that he, you know, he lurks a lot. He's there for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And there's very active listener and very active, like, behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. Trusted with messages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Thane of exposition, if you will.
Something that's interesting, I think you brought it up just a little bit, but what is it like to sort of do different parts in the different roles? And actually, one of that, we were backstage, and in the captain's speech, you are still sort of like uniquely aware of the different ways in which the speech has been cut mm-hmm. from your product, from the Chicago Shakes, and now from the First Folio production.
Yeah.
So I have a couple questions about the different parts, but one is, how long does that ownership last? Of a part that you've played.
Well, I think the ownership lasts until closing night. I don't think you have any right to anyone else's interpretation of the
mm-hmm,
script.
Mm-hmm.
It's just interesting to me that you do sort of subconsciously have this reaction to words that either are there that weren't before,
mm-hmm.
you know, or that have been cut that you remember saying. I mean, I inevitably end up reciting the captain's speech mm-hmm. in my head along with James as he's saying it on stage, and he gets to points that have been cut, and it always throws me every night because mm-hmm. I expect something to be there and it's not, or you know, and that's not a judgment on the cutting of the script. It's just so ingrained.
Get,
I mean, we did
yeah.
96 performances or something like that of
yeah. wow.
of the show last time.
Wow.
So
and go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say that I can still hear that other production in my head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can still hear Patrick doing the Doctor. I can mm-hmm. still... It actually takes a little bit more focus for me to play Ross, because I thought the actor that played Ross at the pier, James Newcomb, he was very... I thought his Ross was really exciting and interesting, and so I really had to focus a lot on what I was doing in any given moment just to not hear his voice, because it had such an impact on me. And also, I was going to callbacks for this one while we were doing the other one.
Right. Wow, wow, wow.
So it was kind of like he was definitely part of my process the whole way through.
And the other thing that happens is when you're off stage, because this play has a lot of small groups, I mean, small number of character scenes, like mm-hmm. between Macbeth and Lady Macbeth, so people are off stage a lot. So, you know, you're reading or you're doing something off stage, and you have little triggers that, you know, because the show is going through your
right.
ear, but there are
right,
certain
right, right.
lines that you always go, okay, that's I need to get ready.
Yeah.
So I still, you know, I hear those, the triggers I used to have for my other track, mm-hmm. and I start to, you know, get ready and think, oh, no, I've got a couple more scenes to go. Yeah.
That's
luckily, I've got EB, because some of my, for this production, I can always hear EB.
Yeah. It's
folks in Naperville, if you could just open your window, you might be able to hear
some. One thing I found interesting, too, is that as I was tracking through this particular production, I am on stage for pretty much the opposite half of the play that I was on stage at the pier. So I find myself giving myself those triggers on stage, and so that the moments that I'm going through as Macduff are the moments that I would react to in the dressing room going, I got to get ready on the pier.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an interesting
juxtaposition. Yeah, I think maybe the only scene that I'm on stage for now that I was on stage for before, aside from the battle at the end, is the coronation and the banquet. No, the banquet, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I was not on stage for the coronation.
And yeah, I guess I think you've touched on it a little bit, but if you want another opportunity, in what sort of ways do you feel influenced at all by the previous performance of the part? Because you had to watch it or hear it like 96 times.
Well, one of the parts I'm playing wasn't in our version at the pier, so that makes life easier. Old C-word, or spry C-word, was cut from the show.
Okay.
So
you have a unique opportunity where you don't have to feel influenced. Joel, you said you struggled a little bit to... escape from his interpretation.
Definitely. And I still have to really try to stay focused, or I'm a very auditory learner anyway, mm-hmm. and when you hear something that many times, it's in there. And so, I mean, even Macbeth's lines, I can still hear Ben saying them. Nathan's different, but I can still, it's in there. So especially when I have to make sure that I'm focusing on right now and what I'm doing to the other person in order to leave that behind. Because if I ever start coasting or something like that, I'll be like, doing Jamie Newcomb, you know?
Yeah. And you knew you were going to be doing it while we were still doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I think something that actors get asked a lot, I think I heard Nathan joking about it before, is when you do like two shows in rep or you do a show closely after another, people are always asking, do you get confused? Do you ever start doing the other play? And you don't. But this, you might actually.
Well, you know, but so much of that is kind of a somatic memory. The body's, you know, because physically it is so different doing this one.
Yes.
Well, I mean, there's just the idea of the difference between doing a play inside and outdoors is just so vast
that
you would never get confused. I think that's also true about the question you were asking in terms of hearing the other actor's voice in it, because particularly with Ross, I think, because so much of what he was doing was rooted in a kind of intimacy, in a kind of almost filmic version that we cannot do because we're doing it outdoors.
Right. The pier is such an intimate space. I mean, you're right in front of the audience,
yeah,
and they're on top of you. I mean, as you go up,
right,
you're never really more than 30 feet away from anyone.
But I think I have something that relates to the question that you're at. This is when I've experienced what you're talking about. More often than not, it's when I have an experience like that, it's when I've done understudy run through the day before, and then I'm standing across from the person who was saying the lines I was saying 3 hours earlier. That's when it gets a little bit weird.
That's hard.
Yeah.
It's always very hard when you're understudying a role that you have scenes with.
Yes.
Because you're, you know, trying not to mouth lines along with that person on stage.
One of the things I think that really, for me, delineates that production from this, you know, when I was backstage slathering myself with blood, I knew what I was going out to do. It's the bloody captain, and I had this sort of prep of, okay, my legs hurt, I'm shot, I'm, you know, bleeding from the face and all of this. And here, as Macduff, I'm a victor. I've just won a battle instead of getting my butt whooped. And so, you know, as far as the two productions bleeding together, that really, for me, separates them. So I don't feel like I'm doing the same show. Mm-hmm. I'm doing something completely different.
And it's also the rhythm of the show I find terrifically different, because the pier, we just had so much more technical capabilities that the technical events, whether it was the screens coming down or video, because we had video in that production, and just all kinds of lighting effects, sound effects we could do to fill in the show. In this case, you know, we're very minimal, so the text is the rhythm of the show. We've got fights, but after that, it's just like keep the text moving. I think this show is actually much shorter, isn't it?
Oh, it's about an hour shorter.
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting. Yeah. Are you sick of Macbeth? Like, if I wanted to cast you in a production of Macbeth that would start, like, you know, rehearsing August 17th, would you?
I wouldn't mind a respite first. You know, I mean, the great thing about this is we did have a couple of months in between, you know, closing. No, I think the play, it kind of eternally reveals itself to you. And there's got to be some more old people in there that can play. How about you, guys?
I think I've lost a little bit of hair from doing tragedy for about 8 months straight. But it's not, I mean, it's fascinating work. I mean, it's not something that I would turn down again. I mean, it's really, there's so much to mine in it. I mean, we haven't fully explored this production.
No.
We didn't ever get to fully explore the one at the pier, despite the 96 shows. I mean, it's got this life that sort of is boundless, I guess.
And the audiences love it. I mean, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
What about you?
Cast me, please. Yeah, whatever. But I know what you're saying. I mean, just, I guess a little bit of that could creep in, that you were just like, these words again. And it is kind of, it is a very dark play, and so some of those things that I don't have to do, but I, you know, like killing the children last time was never something that I always kind of walked off and was like, those are horrible people. This is a horrible play, you know? And so if anything, just, the drama, the tragedy of this can be a little bit heavy, but I'm working on a comedy with EB and kind of cleansing the palate, and that'll be up and down very quickly. So, I'm happy to do it again.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder, I mean, I see it's kind of an unfair question, because to some extent, obviously, work is work.
Absolutely. Yes,
right. And you'd be sort of hard pressed to turn down any job. But I wonder, like, are there shows that you, because part of what inspired this discussion is that there's been a bit of like a critical kerfuffle about the number of Macbeths that have been produced in the past like 16 months in Chicago. And I wanted to get kind of like an actor's perspective on that. And so do you feel like, you've said a couple of things like why Macbeth gets done so often, that it's a universal story.
But hadn't, you know, like the period, they'd only done it, I think, once before.
Yeah, I think likewise here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, I guess, I don't know if people are leery of it because of all the superstition about it. It also mm-hmm. does require, it's a large male cast with the
kids.
And the kids are always very difficult to cast because it's just hard to work around school schedules and find reliable kids. And also, you need a lot of fights.
Right. Right.
I mean, Nick, our director, Nick Sands, who's not only a wonderful actor and director, but also fight choreographer. I used to joke, kid him that, you know, this was going to be one prolonged battle interrupted by snippets of dialogue.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you said the other thing, which is that audiences really do love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think how different the two shows really are and the different track, because of what Patrick was just talking about with Nick and the fights, I found out he was doing this show, and I contacted him and said, I want to fight for you. I want to be in your show, and I want to fight, you know? And that, at that point, I think we were in rehearsals for this, and so I wasn't even thinking about, oh, I'll get sick of the play or anything. I was like, no, this is a unique experience to be able to fight and work with Nick.
That's interesting.
But I will say one thing that I remembered as we're talking about this. There was a talk back where one of the actors who had played...
A talk back for Chicago Shakes?
Yes, at Chicago Shakes, sorry. Who did mention, one of the students asked him if this same question, and he said, I think it's going to need to be 3 or 4 years before I want to be in another one.
Right.
You know, so that's out there. That definitely exists.
Mm-hmm. But do you feel like, I guess what I'm building towards is, are there shows that don't get done that you'd love to see done, like, instead of Macbeth? Or are you happy with Macbeth being done, that it like, bears the repetition that it's at least that it's getting right now?
I don't know that I would replace this play with anything.
Yeah.
I don't think that if someone said they were putting Macbeth in their season, I would say, oh, no, do this instead.
Mm-hmm. Like Love's Labor's Lost.
Right. That's the allegory.
People come, tens of people.
But
and think, no matter how much it's been done this year, it's been selling well all the time.
Yeah.
People still want to see this play.
What have you learned about Macbeth from doing these two shows? I mean, it is a famous play, and we all, I think, have like a lot of understanding of the play. We all have a lot of beliefs, a lot of sort of Macbeth baggage going into any production. Mm-hmm. Having done it twice, that's been sort of revealed to you about the show.
I understood. I think I was a little intimidated at the pier when we were working on this. Mm-hmm. The first time through, I was just kind of so worried about what I was going to do, and I didn't want to mess up around these other actors and these other pros in the city, you know. So I kind of got, anxietal a little bit, I guess, about that process. And I this time through, I was really able to understand the struggle that was going on that Macbeth was writing about, the paganism versus Christianity coming in, and I think Nick really brought that to light. But it's in the text, and Barbara found her own struggle, but that was something for me that really came out in this one that I thought, oh, I understand Macbeth more because I've done this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is one of the stark differences, I think, between the two for me. I said before, the one at the pier felt like sort of a psycho thriller, and I think it was really because the aspect of the supernatural was something really foreign to that world. When Banquo's ghost appears, it was jarring to Macbeth in a way that in this world it's not the same impact. It's almost as, I mean, in the world that we're portraying in at First Folio, it's really about the supernatural being a part of life, and it's this sort of sea change of religion and politics and Scotland in this time period shifting from this sort of pagan society where people talk to witches and seek out supernatural guidance into this more Christian belief that the supernatural is something evil and it's this, you know, it's good, it's heaven and hell, you know, it's that kind of juxtaposition. But at the pier, since we put it in such a modern context, it really became a very... It really became a very jarring influence. The witches and the supernatural were something that I think Macbeth struggled with in a different way because it wasn't a part of his world from the beginning.
That's interesting.
The other thing that I'm always struck with every time I see the play, or especially being in it, and especially this time being because C-Word is back in it, is the play is littered with dead children and references to dead children. And now as old C-Word, I have another one. But also... people being informed on stage that some very intimate person in their life has been killed, and how often that happens in this play, and how different people respond to that. This is, I just much more vividly aware of that.
Do you think of yourselves as classical actors? You've now spent half the year this year doing Macbeth, doing Shakespeare. Do you think of yourselves as classical actors? What does that mean? Or
I really felt like one this year because I did 12th night in Salt Lake, then I understudied Edward, then I did Macbeth, then I did 12th night, and now I'm in Macbeth again. So this is definitely a year where I feel like I was a Shakespearean actor.
Wow.
How about you?
That's interesting.
I don't know that I consider myself a classical actor. I think of myself as an actor. I mean... I came to an alarming realization a couple weeks ago when I looked at my resume after adding this production to it and realized that I had two living playwrights on it. I guess I lend myself towards classical theater because it feels like sort of my bread and butter. A friend of mine once said that a year without Shakespeare would be like a year without Christmas. If he couldn't do a Shakespeare production in a year, he'd feel sort of slighted in a way. And I can dig that because there's something in the richness of this language and in the scope of these stories and the depth of the emotion that you have to invest yourself into in a production like this that's really rewarding. And it's not to say that it doesn't exist in contemporary theater as well, but it really, like Patrick said, kind of makes you feel in touch with the ages and to know that this play has been done for 600 years and that it will probably be done for another 600 years. It makes you feel really a part of something greater than just this work.
I've done an awful lot of Shakespeare in my career, more than 20, 25 Shakespearean productions. But you know when I really feel like a classical actor? And I'm gonna, maybe classical is not even the right word, but... when I'm sitting under the stage, sometimes sit underneath there.
Here at First Folio,
because it's very rustic here at First Folio. But I love the experience of sitting under the stage, hearing the creak of floorboards over my head, and I feel a kind of kinship to actors throughout the ages. That's where we've been. And
the boards.
Under the boards. And unlike hearing a show on a speaker system backstage, this is in three-dimensional space. I know where you are because I hear your voice, not over a loudspeaker. And somehow, that's also a very special feeling.
Yeah,
that's great. So, do you feel lucky? Is it a good year?
I'm always lucky. Always feel lucky to be working.
Yeah,
that's right.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for being a part of this.
Hey, Benno, thanks very much.
Benno. Thank you.
And goodbye.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of August 3rd, 2009. The Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire has announced its 2010 season, which will comprise their 35th year. The musicals announced for the upcoming season are... Fiddler on the Roof, directed by Marriott favorite David H. Bell. Fiddler on the Roof opens next February. After that will be the Chicago premiere of The Drowsy Chaperone, this one directed by Mark Robin, that can be seen next May. Following that will be Once on This Island, that will start next July. The popular A Chorus Line kicks onto the stage September of 2010, and The Music Man will be coming in November of 2010. For more information on Marriott Theatre's 35th season, stay tuned to theaterinchicago.com. Roger Bart and Shuler Hensley will be coming to Chicago with Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein the Musical that can be seen here in Chicago in November. Roger Bart will be reprising the role he originated on Broadway, that is, of Dr. Frankenstein, and Shuler Hensley will be playing the monster and will be keeping that role in the touring cast. Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein will be here in Chicago for a 6-week run. For more information, click on over to Theater in Chicago's Coming Soon section. This week gives us another article in Benno Nelson's Full Store Frontal series. This week he interviews Eddie Torres from Teatro Vista. Eddie is their artistic director, and Benno interviews him about how the company got started, who they've worked with in the past, and where they may be going. Be sure to check out the full interview at theaterinchicago.com's Theater News section. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the Theater News from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank our guests for giving us the honor of interviewing them this week. I would also like to thank Benno Nelson and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And I would also like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.